Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The podcast is about to begin.
Graveyard Grumbler Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 1 of the Graveyard Grumbler Podcast. I am your host, Tino Romero Jr., a.k.a. the Graveyard Grumbler. First off, before I get into anything else, thank you, everybody, for your messages asking when the next episode is going to drop. I greatly appreciate it. It keeps me motivated. I do apologize for the over-exaggerated hiatus, just life in general happened. I am back now, and I want to thank each and every one of you for the motivation and the wanting to return into making the podcast. Thank you very much. So now that that's out of the way, let's get into one of my favorite topics of all time. This episode is coming out with bangers. This episode right here has me pumped up. Season 2, Episode 1, we're kicking it off with the People's Temple. Now I know, Grumbler, I've heard about this. Grumbler, I heard the People's Temple already. And some of you, some of my newer listeners are thinking, what is the People's Temple? Well, if you don't know what the People's Temple is, listen to this episode, listen to the show, and you will find out what the People's Temple is about. This is one of my favorite topics of all time. So let's go ahead and get into it. Today's episode, the People's Temple, we're talking about James Jones, a.k.a. Jim Jones, Mr. Cult Leader, one of the biggest, most notorious, infamous cult leaders to ever have a cult. So let's learn about him today. Let's get into it and let's figure out why he did what he did. His early life. James Warren Jones was born on May 13th, 1931 in rural community of Crete, Indiana to James Thurman Jones and Lynette Putnam. Jones's father was a disabled World War I veteran who suffered from severe breathing difficulties due to injuries which he sustained in a chemical weapons attack. He tried to augment his income by occasionally working on neighborhood road repair projects because the military pension he earned due to his wounds was insufficient to support his family. Pause. Let me start something off right there. First off, I think the way that the American government treats our veterans is completely disgusting. I mean, that's not even talking about the people in general of the United States. I'm talking about the military specifically. Hats off to all the men and women who serve in our military proudly, who actually have the balls to go out there and join the military, period. My hats are off. Power to you. I'm glad you do it. However, my thing is yo, once they are done doing that, giving up 4, 8, 10, 12, 20 years of your life, and you come back and you can't even support your family and you were wounded in war, that there is something wrong with that. So right out the gate, I can understand growing up in poverty, Jim Jones is going to have this weird way of thinking. And I'm not talking about growing up in poverty is weird. What I'm talking about is that when a child is introduced to extreme stressors, the brain is developed in a different way. And I get it. Things happen. People are not able to fulfill what they're supposed to do, especially when you're injured. Hey, you do what you got to do. Let's continue. His father's illness led to financial difficulties, which in turn resulted in intense marital problems between Jones's parents. In 1934, in the midst of the Great Depression, the Jones family was evicted from their home for failure to make mortgage payments. Their relatives purchased a shack for them to live in a nearby town in Lynn, Indiana. The new home where Jones grew up lacked plumbing and electricity. Anybody who knows and people who just realize that it is very difficult to grow up in extreme poverty. And then especially during the Great Depression era, if you're not familiar with the Great Depression era, just do a quick little Google search on the Great Depression. And it was pretty fucked up. I mean, the entire United States was in shambles because of the fall of the economy. It was crazy. People migrated. That's where the Dust Bowl came in. People from Texas, Oklahoma migrated west. That's how a lot of, you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, I'm not going to get into the Great Depression. We're not here to talk about the Great Depression. We're here to talk about Jim Jones and how he is completely, crazily fucked up. Let's continue. In Lynn, the family attempted to earn an income through farming, but again met with failure when Jones's father's health further deteriorated. The family often lacked adequate food and relied on financial support from their extended family. They sometimes resorted to foraging in nearby forests and fields to supplement their diet. Could you imagine growing up as a wee little lad? Shout out to all of my people who are in Europe. I know that my accents are horrible. If you listen to the show, you realize that I try my best to do the accents, but I fail, and it's no disrespect in any sort, way, shape, or form. What I'm just saying is, sometimes I want to throw out a little, it's croaky out here, or it's a little difficult. You know, I want to throw some fanciness out in my podcast. And if you know, then you know. And please do not take it as disrespect, because I'm not trying to disrespect anybody's beautiful cultures and beautiful accents. I'm just jealous that I don't have that awesome accent. So let's continue. Could you imagine being a wee little lad and trying to eat, period. Just trying to eat. And the best thing that you can resort to is foraging in the fields and the forest in order to supplement your diet, just to eat some sort of food. Not even a meal. You're just trying to get in some of your calories so you don't die, so you don't wake up dead. How extremely difficult, not only for the kid, but on the parents, that they're not able to adequately supply food for their children. That is probably one of the most difficult, heartbreaking things to deal with as an adult or as a parent, period, regardless of the age, right? Right. It makes sense on how a lot of people develop certain paths and futures and et cetera for their futures. It makes sense. However, it shouldn't be a thing. Like I mentioned earlier, it shouldn't be a thing because their father was in the military and was wounded in World War I. It just doesn't make sense. Anyway, according to multiple Jones biographers, his mother had no natural maternal instincts, and she frequently neglected her son. Damn, that sucks. When Jones started to attend school, his extended family threatened to cut off their financial assistance unless his mother got a job, forcing her to work outside her home. You know, unfortunately, that is one of those deals where people are either born with maternal instincts or they are completely, utterly useless when it comes to that. You know, some people say this and some people say that. That's not the point. The point is that it's difficult when your mother, that one that you look upon and lean upon and look for guidance and help, can't guide you because they don't have that maternal instincts. They can hardly even keep you alive. And then to top it off, now whatever financial assistance, which I'm guessing are the electrical bills and other things, utilities that are being paid by the family, are now going to be cut off unless the mom goes and gets a job. Difficult. I get it, but still, it's rough. And now when a child is neglected, now that they're starting to realize, I need to go find somebody that loves me. Why can't anybody love me? Don't trip. My album's going to be dropping soon. I'm joking. There's no album coming out. However, that all deals with and adds to what people are born with. And it ends up becoming something greater. And in Jones's case, he becomes one of the most infamous cult leaders in the history of the world, not even of the United States. He's well known across the world on having one of the largest cults ever in the history of cults. Let's continue. Meanwhile, Jones's father was hospitalized multiple times due to his illness. As a result, Jones's parents were frequently absent during his childhood. Although his aunts and uncles lived close by and gave him some supervision, Jones often wandered the streets of the town, sometimes naked. Jones was cared for by the female residents of Lynn, and they frequently invited him into their house to give him food, clothing, and other gifts. Unfortunately, the other gifts aren't mentioned on what those could have been. But think about it. If you don't have your parents around, you have nobody to guide you, nobody to say, don't walk around the street with your ding-ding flapping in the wind. That's not cool, bro. Or, hey, maybe you shouldn't walk around with your ham cheeks out in the public when it's kind of not really a nudist resort. You know, you do what you want in your room in the comfort of your four walls, but it's kind of not cool to let your dingle dangles dangle in the wind when you're walking down the street. You have to cover those up, my boy. You have to. One way or the other, it's going to be awkward for you. Especially since they're in Indiana and it's cold as fuck in Indiana. Now, my suspicion is that when, because of the information that was given or the one that I'm reading, Jones was cared for by the female residents of Lynn, and they frequently invited him into their house to give him food, clothing, and other gifts. I'm starting to maybe, now I might be too forward because I haven't read the book. I have his book right here next to me on my side table. I'm ready to read it. I have to get through my three other books that I promised myself that I was going to read. So I have to get through those books first in order for me to be able to jump into the Jones biography. Now, my suspicion is that he was probably sexually assaulted during these visits or during these being invited into the homes for food and clothing. I'm suspecting that there might have been some abuse going on. That's just me suspecting it. If anybody out there is listening, fact check me. You can message me at graveyardgrumbler@mail.com to let me know if I am wrong. If I'm wrong, I'll take it on the chin and tell you that I'm wrong. But I'm probably not because I'm usually right. Right? Right. All right. Let's continue. What are his religious influences? Because remember, in order for you to have a cult, you have to have some sort of believable theory, something that people are going to follow, something that people are going to want to believe in order to click, in order to feel that they are included in something bigger than themselves. We have to find that aspect. So let's start at the beginning of Mr. Jim Jones's religious influences. Myrtle Kennedy, the wife of Nazarene Church's pastor, developed a special attachment to Jones. She gave Jones a Bible and encouraged him to study it, teaching him to follow the holiness code of the Nazarene Church. Now, Nazarene, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. It looks right, but I don't know. It is N as in November, A, Z as in zebra, A, R as in Romeo, E, N as in November, E. Nazarene Church. I believe I am pronouncing that right. So now we already have somebody to take them under the wing to help guide this young individual into the leader that he ended up becoming. So now we have a path. Now we see something to where, yo, I'm going to become this guy. I got a Bible. Oh, my Lord, Lord, Lord. Let's continue. As Jones grew older, he attended services at most of the churches in Lynn, often going to multiple churches each week, and he was baptized in several of them. Jones developed a desire to become a preacher as a child, and he began to practice preaching in private. His mother claimed that she was disturbed when she caught him imitating the pastor of the local apostolic Pentecostal church, and she unsuccessfully attempted to prevent him from attending the church's services. Yeah, you have to think about this. We have young Jim Jones, Mr. Bible Thumper Extraordinaire. He's starting to be, this is an addiction now. Now he is addicted to this religious part. That he's been baptized multiple times already. And now he's starting to embrace and idolize and copy these guys that he considers great leaders or people that are very influential for him. He's practicing on how to preach, on already how to grasp the attention of followers, so he can one day himself. Now, this is young Jim Jones. This isn't the cult leader. This isn't James. This isn't Jonestown Jim Jones. This is, I want to be the leader of a church Jim Jones. He wants to be on that altar talking about, in the name of Jesus, I ask ya, which way did the Lord walk? Now you have to think about that. Let me put that in your head for now, because this is all going to snowball. This is all going to come to a head sooner or later. Although they had sympathy for Jones because of his poor circumstances, his neighbors reported that he was an unusual child who was obsessed with religion and death. An unusual child who was obsessed with religion and death. Where have we heard things before that wrapped around obsession with religion and death? I will give you a minute. Okay, not a minute. Serial killers, sociopaths, psychopaths, all of these individuals are obsessed with one of something, either religion or death. And that's what's insane about that is that nobody knows, even now. I mean, now people have more of an inclination to see that there is something odd about a child and they should start guiding them to where they get help some way or another, right? Right. But back then, we're talking about the 50s and the 60s, 70s, 80s, even the 90s. People didn't realize that these were extreme red flags, extreme warning signs. Nobody knew that. Let's continue. Jones regularly visited a casket manufacturer in Lynn and held mock funerals for roadkill that he collected. We have old Jimmy Jones right here, old baby Jones. Old Jonestown baby, big Mr. 7 pound, 8 ounce. No, that he was already walking. He was probably like a young teenager already. He wasn't 7 pound, 10 ounce baby Jesus in his manger receiving the gifts from the 12 apostles. But we have him heading over to casket manufacturers, which isn't odd. There's people who are fascinated with death, who want to be involved in that and making sure that everything is brought home for the family and the individual is taken care of. There's nothing wrong with that. However, when you're picking up roadkill and having mock funerals for these animals who are dead, found in the road dead, it's a little off. It's one of those deals like, yo, why? You shouldn't be doing that, number one. But hey, that's, again, we're talking about 50s or 60s, possibly the 70s. One neighbor of the Jones family even stated that Jones killed a cat with a knife for one of these funerals. When he could not get any children to attend his funeral, he would perform the services alone. Well, look, we know as a society that killing animals at a young age is an extremely dangerous red flag. It's an extremely dangerous habit to delve into, to have as a young child. We know this now, right? Right. But then again, the neighbors didn't do anything about it because it wasn't something that was out there for them to worry about. It was, they're just kids being kids. Jones claimed to have unique abilities such as the capacity to fly. Boy, I tell you. He once leaped off a building's roof to demonstrate his abilities to others, but he fell and broke his arm. He nonetheless persisted in saying he had exceptional abilities despite the fall. At times, he would put other children into life-threatening situations and tell them he was guided by the angel of death. Look, check it out. Pause. Number one, don't try to get R. Kelly here, and I'm not talking about peeing on people's faces. Don't get all R. Kelly out here talking about, I believe I can fly. I believe I, oof, and then you fucking fall. If you can't fly, don't try. Those are the words I live by. Damn, bars. Sign me to Def Jam right now. I got bars. When people are delusional and they're grandiose, they start believing in things that obviously aren't true. And in his case, Jim Jones is very lucky that all that happened was he just probably got a few bumps, maybe little cuts and bruises, little scrapes here and there. But it wasn't anything serious to where he killed himself, broke his neck, paralyzed himself, or, you know, he was extremely lucky. And then for him to have that delusion, to continue pumping this into other kids' brain and having them believe that he still has these abilities, regardless of the fact that there was clearly proven that there was no ability to be seen. Now we have certain things to where when you're manipulative and you're able to still convince people something, obviously when they see the truth, I'm not saying it's a gift, but it's a fucking talent, number one. And Jim Jones, at an early age, was able to perfect it, to hone in his skills, to target exactly what needed to be said, done, and acted upon in order for him to start getting people to believe him. And then, of course, as the years persist and the years keep going on, Jim Jones develops and perfects it to where he's able to do it with less effort. Jones allegedly committed countless sacrilegious pranks in the churches he attended as a boy, according to claims he made in adult life. He claimed that he had stolen the Pentecostal minister's Bible and had covered Acts 2:38 with cow manure. He also asserted that he substituted a cup of his own urine for the holy water once at a Catholic church. These are all accusations. These are all alleged. These aren't something that were concrete. This is coming from Jim Jones, to where he is saying that he did this once as a child. There's no proof. We can't back these. There's no second party saying, yeah, this was done. So there's no receipts. However, again, when you have somebody who's manipulating the situation, they're going to say what they can about the situation in order for them to be believable, to have people still say, oh, damn, this was a G. He's a thug. This boy's my boy. He can get it with the getting it. You know what I mean? But no receipts. Although his strange religious practices stood out the most to his neighbors, they reported that he misbehaved in more serious ways. He frequently stole candy from merchants in the town, and his mother was required to pay for his thefts. Again, for those of us who are conscious to some mental health issues, we know that killing cats, thievery, arson, and other certain types of behaviors are red flags that should be addressed immediately. And in Jones's case, unfortunately, they weren't. And we already know the end result. Jones regularly used offensive profanity, commonly greeting his friends and neighbors by saying, good morning, you son of a bitch, or hello, you dirty bastard, end quote. Similar to his mother, Lynetta, who frequently swore in public and found amusement in people's offense at a woman cursing. Jones's mother usually beat him with a leather belt in order to punish his misbehavior. That's not, you know, when people say, do as I say and not as I do, 10 times out of 10 plus one, people are going to do what you do. And it's not very good. It's not very good that he was abused for pretty much mocking the behavior that his mother had. Jones also developed an intense interest in social doctrines. He became a voracious reader who studied Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Karl Marx, and Mahatma Gandhi. Now that's an interesting book collection. Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Karl Marx, and Mahatma Gandhi. Jones would tell his wife that Mao Zedong, who was his hero. Whoa, hold on, pause. Jones would tell his wife that Mao Zedong was his hero. He spent hours in the community library and he brought books home so we could read them in the evenings. I don't know. Yeah, you know, reading certain books, I understand for interest. And unfortunately, if you are direct or more brought in and pulled to a certain type of books, it's going to be bad, especially in the events of Mr. Jones and the way he was raised. Unfortunately, because of that, reading those books weren't really good for him as a person, but him personally, they were great because he read and studied from some of the greatest manipulators, some of the greatest cult leaders that the history of the world has ever been introduced to. So when you get a firsthand teaching from some of these greats, you don't, and I only say great because they have made a severe, a huge impact in society, in the books of life and everything into what put them as the awful people that they are, put them into the category that they were put in. Mahatma Gandhi, I get it. He was a peaceful guy, but he still had a cult following. He still had huge words that impacted greatly for the positive or negative. It doesn't matter. A cult is a cult. He did it right for peace, love, happiness, and to better the Indian people. My hats are off to Mahatma Gandhi. However, again, in this scenario, in this example, he is being grouped as some of the great manipulators and cult people that you can find. Although he studied different political systems, Jones did not espouse any radical political views in his youth. But as World War II started, Jones developed an intense interest in the Nazi Party. He was fascinated by their pomp, by their cohesion, and Hitler's total power. The members of his neighborhood found it disconcerting when he extolled Nazi Germany. Anybody who supports Germany, who supports the Nazi Party. Now, before I say what I'm going to say, let me give you this little bit of history. Remember, America actually applauded Adolf Hitler in the 30s when he started to when his rise of power started climbing. Remember, America went to the Olympics that were held in Nazi Germany. Nazi Germany was completely overran by, number one, Nazis, and by the Germans in the Olympic Games. America at the time applauded Adolf Hitler for his quick economic turnaround, Hitler's quick response on boosting the German economy. America celebrated and saluted Hitler at the beginning of Hitler's rise of power. Facts, receipts, check the books, boom, bang, booga, bow, read it, my boys and girls. So when you have somebody in the early times during the World War II era, during the Nazi, and again, Nazi Germany was fucking disgusting. It was disrespectful. It was disgusting. It was gross. It was extremely absurd. It was everything negative that you can say about a party that conducted those atrocities to the Jewish people and other people. I mean, again, anybody who wasn't of their prototype, of their criteria, were put in camps or just murdered. It was atrocious. World War II is a very dark, dark cloud in the world that we live in. So when you have somebody practicing and saying that they support the Nazi Party, that again, that's another red flag that we should start looking at. Jones acted as a dictator over the other kids, ordering them to goose-step together and beating those who disobeyed. One childhood friend recalled Jones shouting, "Heil Hitler," and giving the Nazi salute to German prisoners of war who were traveling through their town on their way to a detention facility. Extremely large red flags when you have somebody, a kid. Well, we don't know. Probably, I don't know what time the age is. Again, I did mention about him early, about being married, but that was a quick little excerpt about the books that he was into from that childhood. But when you have somebody who is giving Nazi salutes, who is celebrating and saying, yo, we should act like this, and I'm going to act like this, and this is how it's going to be, people should have realized this is not good. This is a red flag, big time. Commenting on his childhood, Jones stated, saying, quote, "I was ready to kill by the end of the third grade. I mean, I was so aggressive and hostile, I was ready to kill. Nobody gave me love, any understanding. In those days, a parent was supposed to go with a child to school functions. There was some kind of school performance and everybody's parents was there but mine. I'm standing there alone, always alone," end quote. This is Jones as an adult talking about he was ready to kill people by the end of third grade. And if we see the pattern that he took, we can see that sociopathic and psychopathic tendencies were very prevalent in his youth. He killed animals. He didn't care for any friendships or any relationships, period. He felt no love, no empathy. He dictated and beat his peers. Can't even call them friends. Psychopaths don't really have friends. But because of the lack of love, the neglect, and everything else that checks those boxes, we have Jim Jones saying, "I was ready to kill people at an early age." Crazy. Let's get into some of his education. That was all his early, when he was a wee little boy. So let's start getting to some of his education. In high school, Jones continued to stand out from his peers. Jones went by the nickname Jimmy during his youth and almost always carried a what? Jones went by the nickname Jimmy during his youth and almost always carried his Bible with him. Jones was a good student who enjoyed debating with his teachers. There's nothing wrong with that. I've seen people when I was in high school in the 90s carry around their Bibles. Well, hey, hats off to you. If that's what it is, the Lord's there to protect you by far. Hey, more power to you, homie. That's on you. He also had the habit of refusing to respond to anyone who spoke to him first and only engaged in conversations when he started them. In contrast to his peers, Jones was known to dress in his Sunday church clothes every day of the week. Now, let me highlight something here. Let me point out to you manipulation. Let me point something out on one of the classic textbook manipulating strategies that people of his nature use. It says that he also had the habit of refusing to respond to anyone who spoke to him first and only engaged in conversations when he started them. So if you ever encountered somebody who you're trying to talk to and they just kind of give you a vacant look, and then there's this awkward silence, and then a conversation starts up that by the person you're trying to engage with, but the topic is completely different from what you brought up, that is a manipulating tactic. If somebody walks up to you and starts engaging and you don't engage back, they're going to continue until you finally respond. If you don't get a response from them, they're going to get angry and they're going to probably walk away. But this is classic manipulation. You're going to do what I tell you to do. You're only going to speak what I want to talk about. And if you don't have that, then I'm going to try to change the topic, the conversation, to what benefits me, what I want, and what I want to talk about. If you ever meet somebody like this, kind of stay away from them because it is not good. It's all bad. Trust me, I know from experience. His religious views alienated him from other young people. He frequently confronted them for drinking beer, smoking, and dancing. At times, he would even interrupt other young people's events and insist they read the Bible with him. That's just overbearing, pushing. Again, that's fear, that's intimidation. That's all classic signs of sociopathic or psychopath, or now it's antisocial behavior. Now that's, I think that's what they call it now. Jones did not enjoy participating in sports because he detested losing, another sign. So he coached teams for younger children instead. Jones was disturbed by the treatment of the African Americans who were in attendance at a baseball game he attended in Richmond, Indiana. The events at the baseball game brought discrimination against African Americans to Jones's attention and influenced his strong aversion to racism. Now, we're going to get into something that was, I did not know at all, but apparently it was true, and it's very shocking that it is. And you're going to trip out on this as well. Jones's father belonged to the Indiana branch of the Ku Klux Klan, which enjoyed considerable support in Indiana during the Great Depression. Jones described how he and his father had a disagreement about race and added that they had not spoken for many, many years as a result of his father forbidding one of Jones's black friends from entering his home. First off, I did not know that Jones was legitimately raised by a legitimate certified receipt. Receipts in hand, KKK member. For those of you out of America and are listening to my podcast, thank you very much. However, let me share a little bit of insight at you. I know that the Ku Klux Klan is more of an American thing. So I know neo-Nazis and Nazism is a worldwide thing. So Ku Klux Klan is a separate cell. It's another entity of racism here. They are usually Christian and white and extremely conservative and only care about the purification of the Aryan race. They wear robes, they cover their face like little bitches, and they're all afraid to actually say up and speak it unless they have protection and strength in numbers. Other than that, they're just another racist piece of shit that want to spew hate and stupid, stupid idealisms into America. So for those of you who are around the world, just think about it. Neo-Nazism is ridiculously fucking stupid. And the KKK is exactly in that same category. Ridiculously fucking stupid. Fuck the KKK and fuck the Nazis. Boom, I said it. Bottom line. Ultimately, Jones' involvement in organizing baseball leagues ended when he callously killed a dog in front of players by dropping it from a window. Again, sociopathic tendency. Antisocial behavior textbook. the lack of empathy for animals. He killed a dog in front of his players. Again, these are kids. These are little boys and girls, probably just little boys. I don't think girls were allowed to play on boys' teams at the time. So now he just killed an animal in front of everybody. And of course, they're going to kick him out. Like, oh my God, why would you do that? That's so not cool, Jones. You know, again, I don't know how people spoke back in the 50s and 60s. I wasn't there. My boy Brian was probably, I think my boy Brian was like 13 or 14 in the 50s or 60s. I wasn't there. Now Jones is married. Jim Jones is married. Now, for those of you who don't understand, people with antisocial behavior are able to function and have relationships. However, certain aspects pop up that are not well contained or controlled. But antisocial behavior does not mean they stay away from everybody and avoid conversation. They don't. They thrive. They can thrive with relationships 20, 30, 40 years. They can have friends for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. That's not a problem. The problem is having a connection and empathy. That's the biggest issue. You know what's kind of difficult is like when little kids have a problem, or when adults have a problem identifying a problem, then, you know, as a matter of fact, identifying a problem for me right now is I need to get some little pep up, little boop, boop, little pick me up here. So I just discovered this product called Magic Mind. Pretty crazy, right? Right. Magic Mind. And I'm an avid coffee drinker. I drink coffee all the damn time. I love coffee. Love it. But sometimes I just get sick of coffee, but I still want that little oomph without drinking the caffeine drinks and the other kind of shit. So I get tired. I'm a truck driver. I drive for long hours. 2, 3, 4, 5 hours sometimes. So 10 hours round trip coming back home. And I don't always want to drink coffee, but I want something that I can just, you know, sip up and get going. And so now Magic Mind reached out to me and said, hey, try this. I said, cool, I'll try it. Drank it for 3 days. And on the fourth day, I'm not going to lie, I didn't believe in it. I did not believe in it. So I was heading down to the valley for people who don't live in Texas. I was heading down, which is about 5 hours away from San Antonio. And I said, you know what? It's 3:40 in the morning. I don't want my coffee. I'm going to fuel up and I'm going to try to get some tea. Well, I wasn't in the mood for tea, but I remembered, bam, I got the product. Let me try this product. And again, I was already drinking it 3 days and I was like, let me check it out. So the fourth day, there I am heading down the valley and boom, took some of this Magic Mind. And that shit worked. Hey, I'm not going to lie. I was focused. My brain wasn't sleepy, but I didn't feel jittery. I didn't feel that the heaviness of the coffee. Of course, not the jittery of the fucking energy drinks. Fuck those things. But it was cool. I was able to concentrate and it lasted pretty decently. It was nice. I didn't have it was just a nice little taste. It was a little zing, a little zip, zesty. It was all those like citrusy. It was pretty good. Drink it cold. Drink it cold. And then boom. Drink that shit. Makes you feel good. But you can't drink it one day and think it's going to help you out. It didn't help me out. When I drink it the first day, the second day, third day, you have to drink it 4 or 5 days in a row. And then boom, again, it has to get in your system. And it actually, I didn't want to believe it. I thought it was full of shit, to be honest with you. And I was like, okay, let me try this. And surprisingly, you're not going to feel this huge, oh my gosh, I can drive for 9,055 hours. No, it's nothing. It's nothing that extreme, but it's enough to help you get focused. It makes you stay more attentive, more alert, which I needed as a truck driver, obviously. And so I'm going to shout out Magic Mind. Hey, Magic Mind, thank you for sending me the product. I liked it. I didn't believe in it at first. I'm going to be 100% honest. I did not believe that it was going to make me focus. And I liked that it was a low, it wasn't so much of an energy boost, but it gave me the attentiveness to be alert and realize, oh shit, I'm not sleepy anymore. My brain isn't tired. I can actually focus on this drive ahead at 4 o'clock in the morning, pitch dark, driving down a flat, straight road, and my eyes aren't dripping and drooping. I had some music playing, got the podcast on load, and I was doing really well. So I want to thank Magic Mind very much for sending me the product. I greatly appreciate it. And now, because of course you know, I'm not greedy. I want you guys to share on this. Try Magic Mind. You can try it. I only support products that I actually believe in. You guys know this. And so if you guys want it, hit up www.magicmind.com/ggpodcast. That's magicmind.com/G as in golf, G as in golf, P as in Pinocchio, O as in olive, D as in dog, C as in cat, A as in apple, S as in super, T as in Tino. Use my code to get a nice little percentage off. You can get up to 56% off of your subscription for the next 10 days with my code GGPodcast20. G as in go, G as in go, P as in podcast, O as in olive, D as in dog, C as in cat, A as in apple, S as in super, T as in Tino, and the number 20. GGPodcast20. And look, you guys, I know I don't do ads, and for me to, I actually have one right here on deck. For me not to do the ad flat out, it just, when I looked at it, I remembered, oh shit, this shit works. Try it out. Let me know what you think. Again, you have to drink it consistently for 3-4 days in a row, and you're not going to get a boom, oh my gosh, I'm zapped up. No, but you're going to realize, oh shit, I'm not sleepy. My eyes aren't heavy. I can actually focus. Try it out. Let me know. Use my code. Hopefully it works. If you guys enjoy it, great. If not, let me know, and we'll see if we can let Magic Mind know why we don't like it, and we'll get it adjusted and hopefully have out an even better product. I don't know how they get better from now, but we'll see if we can. But again, GG Podcast 20, www.magicmind.com/GG Podcast, and you will get straight to the link, order it, enjoy it, have fun. Now let's get back to the show. I had to throw that in there. Boom. Marriage. Jones began working as an orderly at Richmond Reed's Hospital in 1946. Jones was well regarded by the senior management, but staff members later recalled that Jones exhibited disturbing behavior towards some patients and co-workers. Jones began dating a nurse in training named Marceline May Baldwin while he was working at Reed Hospital. So when I read more into that, what was crazy was that it stated that the inappropriate behavior was he was very rude. He was very mean. He was not being very, he didn't have good bedside manners. He was extremely rough. He was not very sympathetic towards people's illnesses and didn't really give a shit about how they felt. Again, antisocial behavior at its best, the worst place that one somebody can work at when they have that type of behavior is at a hospital where you have to care about people. It's just one of those deals that, yo, no, that's not cool. Jones moved to Bloomington, Indiana in November 1948, where he attended Indiana University Bloomington with the intention of becoming a doctor, but changed his mind shortly thereafter. I'm glad. I mean, don't get me wrong. You have to be kind of cold-hearted in order to be able to work on patients, saving their lives. Even though you know they're going to die, you can't really get attached. So I understand that aspect, and I get it. I really do. But still, being a doctor, not cool, bro. During his time at university, Jones was impressed by a speech which Eleanor Roosevelt delivered about the plight of African Americans, and he began to espouse support for communism and other radical political views for the first time. Again, I'm going to tell you that we're going to find something out about Jones that was crazily true that I did not believe, which we already heard one of the zingers that his dad was a member of the KKK. Now, when you're a member of the KKK, you have to pay fucking dues. You have to pay money or put in work, one of the two. Jones and Baldwin continued the relationship while he attended college, and the couple married on June 12, 1949. Their first home was in Bloomington, where Marceline worked in a nearby hospital while Jones attended college. Marceline was Methodist, and she and Jones immediately fell into arguments about church. Jones's strong opposition to the Methodist Church's racial segregationist practice was an early strain on their marriage and throughout the duration of the relationship. Jones frequently emotionally and psychologically abused Marceline. Again, antisocial behavior. You're going to manipulate, you're going to control, you're going to abuse. It's fucked up that nobody pointed this out. Again, this is early 50s and 60s. How were they to know if it wasn't even written yet? Jones insisted on attending Bloomington's full gospel tabernacle, but eventually compromised and began attending a local Methodist church on Sunday mornings. Despite attending churches every week, Jones privately pressed his wife to accept atheism. What the fuck? How are you gonna preach and go to 19 and a half churches every day of the week, twice on Sunday, and then tell your wife, hey, hey, check it out, dog. Hey, baby. Hey, baby boo. Hey, honey muffin butter nipples. Hey, sugar to my frosting. Hey, honey buns. I think you shouldn't believe in God anymore. Even though I go to church 37 times a day, every day of the week, you should be atheist. You shouldn't believe in anything. Boy, I tell you. Through the years, Jones's marriage was affected by his insecurity. He often felt the need to test Marceline's love and loyalty, and at times he used sadistic methods to do so. One recurring tactic he used was to tell her that one of her close friends or family members had suddenly died and then comfort her over the loss before finally admitting to her the story was untrue. Manipulation at its finest. It is boom, right there, flat in front, right in front of you, all bad. That sucks. Damn, poor Marceline. The People's Temple. Now we're starting to get into the development of Jim Jones that we are all familiar with. Mr. Jim Jones. And I know a lot. I know there's like 20,000 podcast episodes of Jim Jones, but this is one of my favorite people to talk about, to read about, to learn about. And nobody can do the podcast like me. You guys know how the Graveyard Grumbler does it. So thank you for listening. Let's continue. The People's Temple. In early 1952, Jones announced to his wife and her family that he would become a Methodist minister, believing the church was ready to, quote, put real socialism into practice, end quote. Jones was surprised when a Methodist district superintendent helped him get a start in the church, even though he knew Jones to be a communist. In the summer of 1952, Jones was hired as student pastor to the children at the Somerset Southside Methodist Church, where he launched a project to create a playground that would be open to children of all races. Jones continued to visit and speak at Pentecostal churches while serving as Methodist student pastor. You know what's crazy is that I looked out, everything that they're saying right now is legit. Put a stamp on it. He legitimately did all this shit, which is crazy to me, knowing that he is antisocial behavior. And that he was, again, his number one thing was to satisfy and fulfill whatever emptiness he had. Which, we understand. You know, now we've listened to multiple mental health. We listened to multiple true crime podcasts. We understand that people who are antisocial, sociopathic, psychopathic, they are going to get what they want, bottom line. In early 1954, Jones was dismissed from his position in the Methodist Church, ostensibly for stealing church funds, though he later claimed he left the church because its leaders forbade him from integrating blacks into the congregation. I couldn't find if he actually stole. There was no prosecution. There was no case. There was just an accusation. They kicked him out of the church for theft. I don't know if there's receipts. Around this time in 1953, Jones visited a Pentecostal Latter Rain convention in Columbus, Indiana, where a woman prophesied that Jones was a prophet with a great ministry. There's another prophets. People will prophesy. People who say that great things are coming to you. And if you're of a certain mindset, you believe it. Hey, as long as it's not hurting anybody or you don't hurt yourself, why not? Jones was surprised by the endorsement, but gladly accepted the call to preach and rose to the podium to deliver a message to the crowd. Pentecostalism was in the midst of the healing revival and Latter Rain movements during the 1950s. As Jones gradually separated from Pentecostalism and Latter Rain movement, he sought an organization that would be open to all of his beliefs. In 1960, People's Temple joined the Disciples of Christ denomination, whose headquarters was nearby in Indianapolis. Archie James assured Jones that the organization would tolerate his political beliefs, and Jones was finally ordained by Disciples of Christ in 1964. So apparently the Disciples of Christ was a huge organization back in the 60s. It had multiple branches, multiple chapters, multiple things of organizations. I believe from my understanding, from what I read, was that their end goal was total religious domination across the entire United States. I might be wrong. If you're into fact-checking, fact-check me, email me, graveyardgrumbler@mail.com to let me know if I'm right or wrong. I'm probably wrong, but that's what I got out of it. But I'm usually right, even when I'm wrong. Right? Right. Let's continue. Jones was ordained as a disciples minister at a time when the requirements for ordination varied greatly and disciple membership was open to any church. In both 1974 and 1977, the disciples leadership received allegations of abuse at People's Temple. They conducted investigations at the time, but they found no evidence of wrongdoing. If you're going to have accusations, if you're going to have things of investigation, people are pretty much going to do what they say and try to cover it up. That way they don't get shut down, discovered, and of course, sent to jail. So it's not shocking to me that nothing was found at that time. Disciples of Christ found People's Temple to be an exemplary Christian ministry, overcoming human differences and dedicated to human services. People's Temple contributed $1.1 million, which now, in 2020, was valued at $4,697,803 in 2020 to the denomination between 1966 and 1977. Jones and People's Temple remained part of the disciples until the Jonestown Massacre. Damn, that's a long time. In Indiana, Jones is criticized for his views on integration. People's Temple became a target of white supremacists. Among several incidences, a swastika was placed on the temple, a stick of dynamite was left in the temple coal pile, and a dead cat was thrown at Jones's house after a threatening phone call. You would not believe or think that people in the 60s, shocking, right? Would have such a hard time integrating the races. It's insane. Mind-blowing, right? Nevertheless, the publicity which was generated by Jones's activities attracted a larger congregation by the end of 1961. Indianapolis was a far more racially integrated city, and Jim Jones was almost entirely responsible. Let me read that again because I was completely shocked when I read this. By the end of 1961, Indianapolis was a far more racially integrated city, and Jim Jones was almost entirely responsible, meaning Jim Jones alone almost fully integrated Indianapolis by himself. Do you understand the gravity of power that takes? The ability to manipulate strongholds of put in laws by that state's government. And in order for them to be racially integrated almost entirely in the 60s is by far one of the most insane things ever. Remember, we had to watch riots in the 60s because of the segregation, because of the racial motivated crimes cops had against African Americans. The segregation. Remember, in the 60s, there were still separated blacks drink here and whites drink here. That it was that segregated still in the 60s. And in order for a cult leader who was solely responsible for one of the largest mass suicides ever recorded in history to help integrate and blur and pretty much erase that racial line is mind-blowing to me. I mean, that shit blew my mind when I read it. I could not believe it. I didn't believe it. I did not believe it one bit. Not one bit that I believe that he did it. So I had to look it up. And receipts. There are receipts. So I'm going to stop this episode here. I still have a whole nother hour worth of recording that needs to be done. And at the end of the second The part two of this episode, at the end of part two, what's going to happen is I have another piece of gifts that I like to give you guys. And I have a piece of audio that's about 40 minutes long. You can listen to the whole thing or not. And this is going to be on part two. Part two. You're going to listen to it and you're going to be shocked on what's happening. I'm not going to get more into details until I release part two, which unfortunately is going to take another week. Probably 1 to 2 weeks, depending on my work schedule. But you're going to want to check out this piece of audio that I put on there. It is amazing. Shout out to the free laws that I'm able to use this audio. I checked all my books, crossed all my T's. But this audio is amazing. I cannot wait to share it with everybody. I am super stoked. I'm going to stop the episode there. We're going to leave off we left off on the relocating the People's Temple. The People's Temple is going to leave. They're going to start off something, a whole new branch. This is crazy. I love this episode. I'm pumped. Or I'm going to stop there before I keep going. I'm going to make this episode like 3 hours long if I continue. And I don't want a 3 hour long episode. I want hour and a half. So I'm going to burn my hour and a half on part two. Bottom line, I want to give a special shout out to Sarah from Toronto. Thank you so much for the research that you did. She is a very important part of my team. I greatly appreciate it. I don't have the time to research all the time. So I asked if anybody wants to become part of my research team, unpaid, unfortunately. And Sarah stepped up and said, yeah, I'll do it. I have no problem. And you have saved me a ton of work. I wish you can give me time for me to record these episodes. But unfortunately, I have to make the time myself. Sarah, truly means a lot from the bottom of my little black heart. Thank you so much, Sarah, for the research that you did for me. It means so much to me. It was a huge help. Thank you very, very much. I mean, it means so much to me. I'm going to end it there. Please tune in for the next episode. Thank you so much for my great return. Season 2, Episode 1, Part 2 coming up in the next 1 to 2 weeks. I guarantee it. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. I'm not even going to say my goodbyes. I'm not even going to say my goodbye because this isn't goodbye. This is until next episode. Part 2 coming soon. Thank you for listening. Bye.
This is the end. This is the end. This is the end. You should friend.
Graveyard Grumbler Podcast. Grumbler.